Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Thursday afternoon, everyone. Welcome to News Radio 1070 WKOK. It is SJS time, otherwise known within the confines of the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio as the Steve Jones Show. And it's great to have you on board today. A little bit later, Nate Mink, Ben Jones. StateCollege.com, their read on the football team and the game coming up this weekend with Indiana. And today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484. That's 800-609-9484. Or visit Rick online at REWfinancial.com. And then we're in the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let It Be Solar Hotline. Love to hear from you. Powered by Lenape Solar. Visit them at lenapesolar.com at 1-800-795-9565. I asked this question yesterday. I'd really like to hear what the fans' response to this happens to be. Do you like the pace of watching a game when Oregon plays, or would you like to see it ratcheted back a bit? Is it too fast? Does it get too monotonous seeing it played that fast? All right, I'd like to hear from you on that at 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. Our thanks yesterday to Don Fisher, the play-by-play voice of Indiana, Patrick Chambers, the Nittany Lion basketball coach, and also Danny Will, the play-by-play voice of Bucknell women's basketball, for joining us on yesterday's show. Great to have them on board today. It's Nate Mink and Ben Jones from StateCollege.com. But first, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick.
Homeowners and business owners, listen up. What if you can make an investment in something that will never lose its incredible value? Invest in the most abundant commodity there is. Sunshine. Lenape Solar can show you how an investment in a photovoltaic or solar thermal energy system can pay you back through saving money and energy with a great rate of return. In fact, an investment in solar energy pays it forward to your great-grandchildren and to our planet's future. Lenape Solar is your trusted local source for solar energy and energy efficiency solutions. Experts in renewable energy legislation and incentives. Professional, certified installers. Take the path towards energy independence by investing in solar energy with Lenape Solar. This is Justin Charles, and I invite you to schedule your free energy consultation today by calling 570-286-1496, visiting Lenape Solar at 140 South 2nd Street in Sunbury, or find us online at lenapesolar.com.
Great to have you with us on this Thursday, brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Go to www.rewfinancial.com. Talk to Rick today. 1-800-609-9484. And we're the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. The Lenape Solar Hotline open today at 1-800-795-9565. You can always go to LenapeSolar.com. We welcome in Sarah Bartlett.
Hey there. How are you?
Doing well. Now, today they're announcing the most valuable player. And we're going to hear from, by the way, Nate Mink, Ben Jones, StateCollege.com, going to join us here in the Sunbury Motors studio. And today they're announcing the most valuable players in baseball. Buster Posey will win the National League Award. He will beat out Andrew McCutchen. McCutchen had a great year. Posey ended up playing for a team that won and also won the batting title on top of it. Okay. Now we go to the American League, where everybody is saying this is going to be really close. No offense, it should not be really close. Miguel Cabrera should be the unanimous selection as the most valuable player in the American League. He won the Triple Crown. His team won the division. His team made the playoffs. Mike Trout had a great year. A great year. He's been awarded the Rookie of the Year. justifiably. He was the best rookie in the league. In the MVP voting, does he finish second? In my opinion, yeah, that's fine. But the sabermetrics people, and we had Murray Chass on the show in August, and he detests the sabermetrics people. There's some value to sabermetrics. For example, sabermetrics puts a value on getting on base, and yet, does it matter how you get on base? Well, for your average and for your contract, getting on base with a hit is big. In reality, in terms of the nuts and bolts of the game, it doesn't matter if you get on base with a walk, a hit, hit by bat, being hit by a pitch, catcher's interference, or reaching on an error. The bottom line is you got on base without giving up an out. So that's important. But they keep going back to this war stat that Trout wins above replacement. What the heck does that mean? So I went to find out what it means. I will read to you. The idea behind the WAR framework is that we want to know how much better a player is than what a team would typically have to replace that player. Well, no offense, if Matt McGloin goes out, I can tell you right now, Stephen Bench is good, but he's not going to be Matt McGloin. I mean, that's called common sense. We start by comparing the player to average in a variety of venues and then compare our theoretical replacement player to the average player and add the two results together. There is no one way to determine wins above replacement. Oh, so there are hundreds of steps to make that calculation. And dozens of places where reasonable people can disagree on the best way to implement a particular part of the framework. We have taken the utmost care and study at each step in the process and believe all of our choices are well-reasoned and defensible. But WAR is necessarily an approximation and will never be as precise or as accurate as one would like. They have a leverage index, a converted offensive WAR index. Fixed a park factor bug. Blah, 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 blah.
I mean, this is crazy to me.
I mean, this is insane. The concept of replacement players. Average is a well-defined concept. You sum up all the observations, then divide that number of observations. We compute averages every day. So why don't we compute wins above average rather than wins above replacement? When computing the value of a major league player, average is a poor baseline for comparison. Average players are relatively rare and can be expensive to acquire. Average players don't make the league minimum. Plus, not all average performances are equal. A team would pay much more than for 200 league average innings than for 50. When a star player is injured, they are rarely replaced by an average player. Usually the replacement is much worse. Well, when they do all this stuff and put it together, Mike Trout is number one. Okay, he's number one. Cabrera's fourth. I use a combination of stats and something called the eye test. Miguel Cabrera should be the unanimous MVP of the American League. He won the Triple Crown. He had more home runs than Mike Trout. He had more runs knocked in than Mike Trout. He had a higher batting average than Mike Trout. His team won the division. His team went to the postseason. Mike Trout's did not. We're finished.
I think you're right. I couldn't agree more. I think they both had MVP seasons, but I don't think any of this other stuff is necessary.
Okay, you, in order to make the selection, and I have to vote on things, okay? I have to vote on things. In fact, I will have to vote next a week from Sunday on the All-Big Ten football team, okay? All right? You have to split tickets. Okay, you have to be able to split hairs on these things. So by saying that Miguel Cabrera should be the unanimous selection of the MVP is not in any way a put down at all to Mike Trout, who had a great year, deserving rookie of the year. Would be a deserving winner if he won the MVP. But you have to pick one. If I'm going to pick one, then I pick Miguel Cabrera. Now, long term, which player do I want? Long term, I might want Mike Trout. He's only 20 years old. I mean, that he's only 20 years old. Upside is off the charts. But when you look at the bottom line is you haven't had a triple crown winner in 45 years. I mean, something happens once every 45 years. You have to respect it. And he didn't win the Triple Crown playing for the last place team. He won the Triple Crown and was a big reason why Detroit even made it to the postseason. Trout was phenomenal. Great talent. Everybody wants him, deservedly so. Will have other chances at MVP in his lifetime. But it's hard to argue that with a Triple Crown winner on a team that made the playoffs versus a guy who led the league in several categories, including runs scored, which is critical. But his team didn't make the playoffs despite everything he put into it. Not his fault his team didn't make the playoffs. There's plenty of blame on the Angels to go around. It does not reside with Mike Trout. But you have to split hairs on these things. When I sit there and vote for Coach of the Year next year in the Big Ten, I'll have to split hairs. When it comes time for me to vote for the Player of the Year in the Big Ten, I'm going to have to split hairs. How do I determine that? Part of it's gut. Part of it's the eye test. I have not made up my mind on what I'm doing with my ballot for next week. But when it comes to this, I find it ridiculous that in the sabermetrics world, they don't think runs batted in is a really great stat. Are you kidding me? You can get on base all you want, which is a critical stat. But how many times do you steal home? I mean, the record for stealing home in a year is Rod Carew with 7. So realistically, you get on base, critical stat. Okay? But you need something to get you home. And that's where a run batted in comes in. This wins above replacement, to me, is lunacy. I know I'm old school. I know I am. Okay, but you can't just make up stuff to justify your job. And the stat guys kind of sat there all say, hey, look, let's justify our jobs. We're going to make up stats. You said they're going to wins above replacement. How do you know? Okay, wins above replacement. Okay, what would be Bob Greasy to Earl Morrow with the Dolphins? Greasy was one of the top quarterbacks in the game when he broke his ankle against the San Diego Chargers in 1972. They bring in the veteran Earl Morrow. Well, there should be a drop-off. Dolphins never lost a game. You don't know. You know, nobody knows. Nobody knows that stuff. It's crazy. All right. Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. 609-9484 or go to REWfinancial.com. Ben and Nate next in the Sunbury Motors studio here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome you to the Sunbury Motors studio on this Thursday. There's no Bill O'Brien Penn State football show tonight. We took care of that on Tuesday night. And we'll take care of it on Tuesday night as well next week because of Thanksgiving. Today's show is always brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. Let It Be Solar hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Let It Be Solar, you can always go to letitbesolar.com. And we're here at the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So great to have you on board here today as we move forward. And about to be joined by Nate Mink and Ben Jones from StateCollege.com. Gonna join us here on the show in just a few minutes. Great to have them on board here on the show today. And Penn State will get ready to take on Indiana Saturday at Beaver Stadium. And that should be a great matchup between the two. A fun matchup. They really play at an incredible pace. That's one of the things I want to talk with the guys about is the pace with which they play. And the pace is incredible. You know, when you talk about pace, a team that is averaging 20.8 seconds a play. It's amazing. And joining us in the Sunbury Motors studio, Nate Mink, Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Guys, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hoosier Week.
It is Hoosier Week. Okay? And it's a different, it's not your daddy's Hoosiers. Okay? Because it's a different style. It's the best offensive Indiana team I've seen since Antoine Randall-El. So let's talk about that first, since you brought that up. Then we'll get to the other parts later. The pace of the game and the way they play it. Do you guys enjoy high-paced games? You enjoy watching the Oregons play, watch a team like Indiana that averages 20.8 seconds a play when Penn State goes NASCAR?
That's interesting. I mean, I'm a young guy. And you'd think, you know, growing up with Nike and everything, Oregon would appeal to a kid like me and certainly high school recruits. I mean, I'm a traditionalist. I like SEC football. I like that, you know, the 17-10, the 17-14 type of slugfest. It's very similar to baseball, pitcher's duels. You know, I prefer games like that versus, you know, rampant offense just because I think there's more strategy involved. It's more of a chess match. You can really, you know, peek inside a coach's mind, and it's just more strategizing than anything.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I loved watching Ohio State and Michigan play earlier in the season. It was a real, like, wasn't high scoring, but it was a fun game to watch. LSU-Alabama was similar. But there's always a time and place for big explosive games. I think everybody kind of enjoys watching that from time to time. Certainly Oregon. You watch the first quarter of the game, you see everything they're going to do, and the game's over. So, you know, that it's fun to watch that as well.
Actually, I like what Penn State does. It's a mix. I like the fact that they'll huddle up, maybe take their time, and then I like that they'll change the pace of the game on you and then go NASCAR for a series here and a series there. I like the change of pace, and I like the fact that there's two different paces to how they play as opposed to get the ball, go, get the ball, go, get the ball, go. I mean, to me, get the ball, go,
I agree with you. After a while, actually, that gets to be a little monotonous to watch. I like the fact that Penn State changes up its pace of play and that when they do go, it is noticeable and it is more enjoyable.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've seen it here for so long where it's just field position, flipping the field, the emphasis on defense and special teams. I mean, it's nice to show, you know what offense in the 21st century is supposed to look like, and, you know, you see that reflected on the field. It's definitely a change of pace.
What? But that isn't that how they play in the SEC?
Yeah,
patient,
absolutely.
Patient football. It's okay. It's fourth down and two. We'll punt, play a little field position, put our defense out there. I mean, a lot of SEC teams play that way. You know, it's one of the more underrated things, I think, in sports sometimes is patience.
And we could honestly,
a lot of people are impatient.
And we could honestly spend the majority of the show talking about, you know, which direction college football is going with the evolution of these offenses. We kind of saw a clash last Saturday in Tuscaloosa with Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M and Kevin Sumlin's offense, basically punching Alabama and Nick Saban's traditionalist style right in the mouth and overcoming that. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch. I mean,
and what's interesting is that Texas A&M had done that to several teams in the first half and then adjust in the second half, and then they've lost some of those games. This time they didn't. How much do you think some of these styles take the offensive line out of play?
I think it changes the offensive line a bit. It's more, you know, offensive linemen have to be a little bit more nimble now, and to be able to swing out and run black and get upfield.
They don't have to protect as long though.
Right. So I mean, it's definitely you almost have to recruit a different type of offensive lineman. I mean, I don't know if you need kind of just like that hog in the middle that's just going to clog up space and really pound you down and batter you down by the goal line. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the ball's coming out in 2-3 seconds, if that. I mean, it's really the thing that upsets me most is that it really puts the defense at a disadvantage, particularly in substitutions. And I know a couple coaches have complained about that. I think Rex Ryan comes to mind. Just the amount, I think he was talking about, actually, coincidentally, New England's no huddle. They're constantly substituting in that no huddle, and New York doesn't have enough time, or the defense doesn't have time to counter those substitutions with their own, like they should, like the rules stipulate. So, to me, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that it's such one-sided right now, but, you know, it's cyclical. Defenses will find a way to adjust. Defensive coordinators are smart enough. They'll figure out a way somehow to slow it down, whether it be recruiting a hybrid linebacker that can just, you know, run a mock out there or what. But
it's interesting though, Oregon's done this for years. A lot of people haven't adjusted to it. I mean, they've done this for years. People have not really adjusted to it yet, to the point where other people are saying, let's jump on board. Ben's not ready to jump on board.
I don't know. I love watching Oregon play, but you're right.
You do, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's fun to watch them play. When they're playing USC, they were just gaining yards at will at times. They just handed off, and the guys would block. And there's a great website called fishduck.com, which diagrams out the Iowa offense. Iowa does not play like Oregon.
Most assuredly, no.
Oregon's offense and a lot of the zone reads that they've done over the years, it's fascinating to see how they can run so many plays and so successfully out of the same sorts of looks over and over again. And I think what Nate said is true, that a lot of these high-paced offensives do take the offensive line out of it and require a different sort of offensive lineman. You watch the Ohio game, you know, it was a three-step drop and the ball was gone, and Penn State's defensive line had no chance to get into the backfield on a lot of those plays. And, you know, Nebraska's offensive line was really good at moving. You know, they would run that sweep play over and over again. It reminded me of watching Zach Mills and Larry Johnson run option plays over and over again. But it's successful, so you can't necessarily in today's game just get the five biggest guys in the state and just tell them to block the guy in front of them. It doesn't work that way anymore.
College football is a game that, as opposed to the more homogenized NFL, I mean, there are some differences here and there, but for the most part, a lot of people run some of the same things. But look at the next 2 weeks. Penn State faces Indiana. They face Wisconsin. Completely different styles. There are more styles in the college game. That's why I found the college game to be more attractive to watch.
Yeah, but, and each, you know, each style can win. I mean, the triple option can win. Georgia Tech wins. Paul Johnson wins. You know, the spread offense wins. You know, the grinded out style of a Wisconsin or an SEC team that can win. I mean, it's just, it's really just, you know, it's variety out there.
But there's one big word that nobody ever talks about. Execution. You can run all the fast pace you want. If you don't execute it, you are going nowhere. So let's give some guys some credit along the way. Indiana's done a good job of executing this offense the way he wants, and they're doing it with their second quarterback and their third quarterback. Trey Roberson was the starting quarterback when they started the season. The guy had been in the system for 2 years. You know, I give them a lot of credit for the numbers they've piled up this year, and they've done it with a JC kid who entered school in January. It's not bad. You know, and to their credit, I think that in a state where Indiana basketball owns it, they've at least gotten some people interested in Indiana football. The last week was a blow to that when Wisconsin beat them. The Indiana defense. Here's the oddity. Those two tackles, Larry Black and Adam Rapogal, have sacks, tackles for losses. In fact, Indiana's third in the Big Ten in sacks behind Nebraska and Penn State. Right? But they're giving up 244 yards rushing a game. When you guys have looked at them, I'm sure you haven't looked at a lot of Indiana games, but what have you seen?
But that's kind of like the oddity of them is they have those two really good defensive tackles, but Wisconsin runs for 500 yards on them. I mean,
it's what they do.
Monty Ball is Monty Ball, and you know, it's
and James White's James White.
Right. Wisconsin's built to run, but you know, it is a head scratcher, and you know, trust me, Penn State paid close enough attention to the tape last week, and I think we're going to see some heavy dosage of 28 back there.
What did you guys take out of last week's game?
In a nutshell?
Oh, we have an hour.
Fair enough. I was impressed. I didn't think Penn State was going to win that game. I thought it would have been over sooner. Not to say that they were going to get blown out, but I wasn't sure what they were made of, and playing on the road at Nebraska against a team that is good at what they do. And they hung in there. And I mean, obviously there's a lot of things that, you know, fans will look back to, you know, when they think about this game for years to come. But I mean, the fact of the matter is,
well, there's only one thing they'll look back on in years to come. There aren't many things. Coaches will look back on many things, but
the
fans will see.
There's one thing that comes to mind when we talk about this game that I think of, but Penn State had their opportunities all on their own to win that game, or at least, you know, do things better than they did. So I think that, you know, Bill O'Brien can probably take that as a positive that they were in that game, and I didn't think they were. And certainly Bill O'Brien didn't call me up and ask me what I think their chances are. But if he did, he'd be happy to hear, and I was pleased.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think lost in all the talk about change and Coach O'Brien and the new New England style offense. I mean, this was kind of, you know, Wisconsin not included, this was kind of their chance to get a signature win here. And, you know, once again, it just seems like Penn State just couldn't. Now to be fair, they were in the game and they could have had a chance to win, but they didn't beat one of the top echelon teams in the Big Ten. And that's kind of been a familiar refrain with this organization in the last decade. I mean, you know,
well, they've won two Big Ten championships in the last decade, so they obviously won some big games somewhere.
I understand that, but you know, there's always talk about not consistently being able to match up with the Wisconsins, the Michigans, the Ohio States.
I won't let the fans get away with that, okay? I broadcast the games. I know what the heck I've seen the last few years and who they beat. And I do know there's a perception. That doesn't mean the perception is always correct. Okay, now, in the last few years, okay, haven't beaten Nebraska the last 2 years. Now, obviously, they split with Ohio State the last 2 years. We'll find out what they do with Wisconsin. Michigan, of course, they beat 3 years in a row. So, you know, it's we'll see what they do the next 2 weeks. But I know what you're getting at.
It's a familiar refrain. I mean, they've been down that road before. Mm-hmm. But, you know, positives are, of course, you know, Zach Zwinak really has come out from fifth on the depth chart.
Yes,
went from the spring when mm-hmm. Silas was in town.
Yeah, he's five,
and is now I think it's safe to say the clear cut number one.
He is the starting tailback.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that's, you know, predicated on practice every week, but
he's the starting tailback.
Trust me, he's practicing.
He's the starting tailback.
He's practicing well enough. So that's a huge positive. And also I think the Jordan Hill, remarkable that he was able to come back, just a week after that horrific looking knee injury, knee sprain, and not only played, but played a significant number of snaps and made a difference. You know, five tackles, I think a tackle for a loss.
That's a man out there. Okay. Yeah. That's a man. Yeah. I mean, some people, he understands the difference between being hurt and being injured.
And just to get the trifecta there, Sam Ficken has made, I think, six kicks in a row, has really been a nice story, is more than a serviceable kicker now. Really, the only thing left for him to check off on his resume is a kick longer than 40 yards. Hasn't had that chance yet.
Right. And just like for Robbie Gould, when he left here, he hooked up eventually with the Patriots, and Adam Vinatieri was a huge help to Robbie Gould in his career. Robbie Gould's a huge help to Sam Ficken in his career, because during the off week, Sam went back there, and Robbie Gould took time out of his schedule, and Robbie helped him out.
Watches every game, sent him some tape early in the year. I mean, he's just really helping him. You know, everything from the plant foot to just what he's seeing out there. I mean, Robbie, and which is remarkable considering Robbie's in the middle of a season for a pretty good Chicago Bears team.
But you know what?
It's a kicking fraternity, I think.
No, but it's more than that. We look back. Remember all those times you look at the Orange Bowl and they make a big deal about all the former Miami players on the sideline watching the Canes? It happens here at Penn State all the time. There is a fraternity of Lettermen. They care about the program. There's an ownership part of it. Robbie Gould's a Penn Stater. He sees a Penn State kicker struggling. He's a Lock Haven guy on top of it. Robbie is. So he helped him because he wanted a Penn State kicker to succeed. There's that fraternity. It's, you know, I know there's the glorification of ESPN. Look at all the Miami guys. Okay, a lot of schools have that. Okay.
Plus, they need a metal detector when Miami guys show up at the sidelines. They don't need that here. Yeah. Just saying.
So, your storylines, Ben?
Yeah, I think the Zwinak one and Ficken are obviously the two big ones. I noticed some people, you know, tweeting during the game, you know, where's Belton? Where's Belton? And the fact of the matter is, Belton's not playing because Zwinak's better. I mean, no offense to Bill Belton, because he's done a lot of good things and he did a good job in the Wildcat when they needed him. Better is probably not fair because they're a different kind of back. But, I mean, Zwinak's getting the job done for him. He's lowering his shoulder. He's getting extra yards. He's got that Zordich leg drive. He's not quite as successful at times as Zordich is carrying six people on his back. But, he's given it all every play, and it's gotten him the job, and he's being productive doing it. So, I mean, I met Zwack, or Zwack, that's an interesting hybrid of his first and last name. I met Zwinak before the season started through somebody else that I knew. And, you know, he's a real nice guy. He's friendly and hardworking. And he was talking about how he hoped that he got that opportunity to play this year. And, you know, certainly no one foresaw him when the season started being in this position. But, it's nice to see that he's taking advantage of it.
In 126 seasons of Penn State football, only three guys have ever caught 63 passes in a season: O.J. McDuffie, Bobby Engram, and now Allen Robinson. Is this as quiet a record-breaking as we have seen?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even when Deion Butler set the career receptions mark, that happened against Indiana and was kind of quiet in its own right. I actually did some research on this and found it pretty remarkable. And the database that I used only went back to 2000, but 567 times since 2000 has a wide receiver caught 64 or more passes in a season. So this is a Penn State.
This is the NCAA.
And across all college football. So this is now nothing to take away from Allen Robinson, remarkable year. But when you put in the context of the rest of college football, this has been done pretty frequently over the last decade. And now, granted, a lot of that has to do with Penn State not being a traditional passing team over the years and everything like that. But, you know,
I would assume that there are like 45 Houston guys on there.
A lot of like, you know, the Western Michigan,
sure,
you know, guys like that. And a lot of them, you know, replicated. You know, Larry Fitzgerald was on there. I
mean, sure. Roy should have been. He was the go-to guy,
But, no, I mean, Allen's obviously having a remarkable year. He's another guy. You know, you look at it preseason, caught three passes. I mean, there was a lot of talk and rumblings that he was having a breakout preseason camp. and that obviously turned out to come to fruition. But, you know, when you go from three catches as a freshman and virtually no playing time to
and you're a plus record, 60, you're a plus, and not only that, he's done it in 10 games.
Right, and
that's not, a lot of buts of a lot of people, isn't that he's not done this. Now, OJ would have done his in 11, and Engler would have done his in 11. Okay, so actually he will pass the mark, you know, because bowl stats count now. Bowl stats didn't count back then. Well, Allen's going to do this first catch, should he make one on Saturday. You know, I'm not going to, you know, should he make one, he'll break the record within the 11-game span. He will have done it the same time frame.
And Stan Hickson, the wide receivers coach, told us last week, you know, the best is yet to come. I mean, we haven't seen the best of Allen Robinson. He has not exceeded Stan Hickson's expectations, mm-hmm. which is just kind of a scary thought to think about.
Nate, Ben, thanks so much, guys. Because we're headed toward the top of the hour, we're going to cut and go, and because we have news at the top. But as always, Nate Mink, Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Thank you for your weekly visit. Appreciate it very much. We will come back, top of the hour news, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or go to REWFinancial.com. Back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.